Hello and welcome to QSO. It's all about ham radio. Brought to you by Trans World Antennas, Heil Sound, Gigaparts, PMC Science, Tux-Support.com, Markham Street Films, and Martin Lynch & Sons, your European distributors for the finest in amateur radio equipment. This week on QSO, our guests are Tom Medlin, W5KUB, with the Ham Radio Helmet Cam. You've seen him at the Ham Fest, you've seen him at Dayton, and you've seen him at Huntsville, and you've probably seen him on the web. So he'll be along shortly, along with Scott Morrison, KA3DRR, who hosts www.ka3drr.blogspot.com. We'll be back with the whole show right after this. If you like to travel, if you're a camper, if you'd like to take your ham radio hobby with you when you go, you need the Trans World Antennas TW2010L Backpacker Antenna. It's the same exact antenna as the TW2010 Adventurer, with the exception it's been streamlined for the person who likes to camp and travel light. It's the same rugged antenna structure as the TW2010, with the black powder coating and stealth design. We all know the TW2010 is a great permanent or portable antenna, but the TW2010L Backpacker takes portable and emergency operation to an entirely new level. It's especially suited for the amateur operator who loves backpacking, cycling, camping. It makes easy access and quick setup possible for the most extenuating emergencies. TW2010L Backpacker Antenna is available now for a limited time for only $399.95. That's right, $399.95. Pricing includes backpacker, quadra stand, carrying bag, and free shipping in the continental United States through FedEx Ground. That's transworldantennas.com. And now for a limited time, only $399.95. That's transworldantennas.com.
Our guest is Tom Medlin, W5KUB. Now, if that call sign sounds familiar to you, it's probably because you've been to a website where you've seen one of his helmet cams coming live from a ham fest. And he does a fantastic job. Matter of fact, wasn't last year, but the year before, I had gone to Huntsville. I left Huntsville and came back Saturday, and I was home on Sunday, so I brought up the live cam from the ham fest. It was real interesting. As I was telling him, I was watching in the flea market area, and I kept saying, well, they didn't sell the What's It yet. It's still on the table. So, how are you doing, sir?
Well, doing great, Ted. Thanks for calling tonight.
Why don't you, for the folks that may not know, that have never seen any of this, why don't you give them kind of a rundown on what it is that you do and how you do it?
Well, okay. You know, Ted, about 7 years ago, we thought about trying to do a broadcast for the hams out there so they could see Dayton and some other ham fest. And we set up a little small system, and we got it going, and it worked pretty good. But in the early days, we didn't have the bandwidth that we needed to support more than, you know, a handful of people. And, you know, we were always getting people saying, well, you know, I can't get the picture. Well, we have fine-tuned that over the years, and at WA5KUB.com, or now W5KUB.com, that's our location or our site where we broadcast the Ham Fest. And what we've done, we've made a lot of improvements to our network. Since the early days, we've added a Windows server with running media services, totally dedicated to our streams, and most importantly, we have unlimited bandwidth. I was trying to figure out how to say this, but we have unlimited bandwidth going out to the internet from our server. And the importance of that is when you start sending these video streams down, you know, a single stream, even a low speed stream, could take 100K. And if you have 300 people watching, that takes 30 megabits of upstream data, you know, into the internet. That's a pretty big circuit. And we have been blessed to have a company work with us, and we have unlimited internet uplink now, so hams all over the world can watch us. We We typically have about 300 hams that are on simultaneously that watch. And in addition to watching a video, we do have a chat room on our website where hams can log in with their call letters and can make requests, you know, go by this booth, you know, go by this forum, or, you know, can you do this for me? Can you get me a picture of the new radio? Or they can just talk to each other on the chat room. So it's very interactive between us and all the hams. We've had hams viewing us from about probably 150 countries. And like I said, we've been doing it for about probably about 7 years now. The last 3 years, we have really, upgraded to the system I was just explaining. And basically, we broadcast our trip live as we convoy or drive, for example, to the Dayton Hamvention. That's about 550 miles. We actually broadcast live our drive, and the chat room is on there. So we have, we have the driver, we have the navigator, we have the radio operator, and we have the computer system and video guy sitting in the car, and we have a computer system running, and we're actually chatting real time with people, and they're actually watching us. And from time to time, if we stop, go in a restaurant, we might wear the helmet cam into the restaurant. We may get a lot of funny looks walking around, but it kind of gives the viewer the impression he's right there with us and, walks right into the restaurant and he sees what we're having for breakfast.
Well, now, I guess the question is, you're mobile. You know, you're out moving around and you're in the car and you're going down the freeway. How are you getting, at that point, how are you getting access to your server? In other words, how are you feeding video from your automobile back to the server relay, or however you're doing that?
Well, there are several ways that we do it. Several ways it can be done. There are providers out there, such as Sprint and AT&T and others that have the broadband mobile national service, which is one that we use. We also, as backup, we also have other systems such as our BlackBerries, where we can tether a BlackBerry to the computer. And whether you're on T-Mobile or Sprint or AT&T, you can actually get a connection that way. So we have a few different backup systems to it. We do try to run wireless network of one of the carriers. It's on the I think it's called EVDO. We also, from that card that goes in the laptop, we also have a 1-watt bidirectional amplifier, and then we also put an antenna, external 6 dB antenna, out on top of the car, which helps us, when you get into these spotty areas or areas where the coverage is not good. It helps us. And we have found that in a 550-mile trip, typically we can broadcast, our trip over 500 miles out of that 550-mile trip with pretty good success. When we're out on the road like that, sometimes the speed goes to a lower speed because, in the rural areas, these telecommunications vendors, they don't provide the broadband capabilities, out in the rural areas. So we usually run it at maybe a reduced speed. It shifts automatically between the speeds. But typically, we can send a stream of probably 58, 60, 65 kilobits while we're on the road very consistently. It's not a great picture, totally clear, but as we're moving in a car and driving, it does look pretty good. But when we get into other locations that have actually the broadband capabilities, we can bump the stream up quite a bit. We can bump it up to 120, 130, or 40K, which really gives the signal a lot more, or the picture a lot more clarity.
I guess I was going to say, I remember going back to the days of CompuServe. Did you go back that far? where they had
yeah,
a little program called Producer, and we were here in Nashville, and we did online chats with this thing. But what it would do is you could take still pictures or just a freeze frame and then pass it along, and it would pop up on the CompuServe software, and then you could do a short audio clip that just sounded terrible. back in the very primitive days, but back then, boy, that was really something. You know, I mean, it was like to be able to be having a chat with some country music artist, and all of a sudden, pow, there the picture pops up, little bitty picture, didn't look great, and then a sound clip that sounded real scratchy. I mean, this goes back to like Real Audio 2.0 or something, or 1.5 or so, way back.
Yeah, you know, things have come a long way in just a short number of years. I think, the technology just almost, doubles or triples itself every year, in the capabilities.
We'll be right back with our guest Tom Medland, W5KUB, right after this. If you already own a TW20 10 Adventurer or Backpacker antenna, and you want to use the antenna on 40 meters, you can get the Trans World Adventurer 4040 Array Box in center section only. Right now, only $139.95. That puts you on 40 meters, and you're dealing with the exact same antenna structure that has made the TW2010 Trans World Adventurer so famous. The black powder coating, the stealth, the way the antenna is able to hide. And in addition to that, it's portable if you want to take it with you. Of course, you can get it with a deluxe travel bag. It's just fantastic. Go to the website and check it out, transworldantennas.com. That's transworldantennas.com. If you can't remember Trans World Antennas, just remember to go to our website at QSO, TedRandall.com, TedRandall.com, and click on the link for Trans World Antennas. Take a look at this brand new Adventurer 4040. As a QSO listener, we really need to hear from you. We would like to know you're listening. We'd like to know how you feel about the radio show. We'd like to hear some suggestions. What would you like to hear more of? What would you like to hear less of? And you can do that by going to TedRandall.com. That's TedRandall.com. There's a place that says email Ted or some such nonsense as that's on the page. Click on that button and send me an email because I want to know what you think. I want to know what you want to hear more of, less of, what you think about the program, where you're listening. How is it coming in on the shortwave? Is it coming in real good where you're at? And what about the time? Is this a good time? Would you prefer it on at a better time? And what would that better time be? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll even send you a QSL card if you'll send us an email. Once again, go to TedRandall.com. That's TedRandall.com. And where it says Contact Ted, just click on that little tab and send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening to QSO.
Well, let's see. I got 16 years old. That was in 1964. So I guess if a person wants to, I'll save them time if they want to calculate that. That makes me 61 years old. So I've had my license, 45 years, I guess. I'm an extra class license. And, I grew up in a very little town in Arkansas. There was of about 1,200 people. So you can see there wasn't a lot of hams there. And, how does a 16-year-old get involved in something like it? Well, my uncle was a TV repairman, and I grew up visiting his TV shop, and I was fascinated with the parts and electronics and everything. And I got me an old radio, an old Zenith, one of these big Zenith console radios, and it had shortwave on it. And I used to listen to riverboats going up and down the Mississippi River, and I thought, man, this is kind of neat. And I just got listening to shortwave and to riverboats and different things like that. And I finally got interested, and I did know one ham in town. And I went and talked to him, and he was a tech class. At that time, he really couldn't do anything for me, so he put me in touch with a general class up in a larger town, where I went up and took my novice test, and passed my novice test and got on the air in 1964. That was back, in the AM days. I don't think sideband was even out then, and then I met a few friends, around in the county that were also hams in my age, and it just kind of went from there. I'm a home brewer. I like to build a lot of my stuff. I built my own transmitters and antennas and SWR meters and keyers and all those kind of things. But I was always interested in electronics, and I would always take parts out of my uncle's trash cans and take it home and try to, hook stuff up and, see if I can make it smoke,
That's back in the day when sweep tubes were cheap.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about that was my uncle, he was probably the only TV repairman for probably two or three counties, and he must have had 500 junk TVs. These are the old chassis TVs, with resistors and capacitors and, filter capacitors and tubes and sockets. And I mean, anything I needed, man, you go up there with some cutters and a drill. You drill out tube sockets. You drill out, you take out filter capacitors, resistors, capacitors. I don't think I ever bought a part for probably, 15 or 20 years.
Well, I know I was this my pre-ham days when I was a kid. I was so fascinated with radio and radio broadcasting and that sort of thing. So I got an old television chassis and I ripped it apart and I left the transformer on there and the power supply, and there were tube sockets already on there, and I took I took two, if I remember correctly, it's a little hazy. Two 6V6s. I found a transformer for audio, and then I used a single 6146 and two 6V6s. I think it was 6V6s for audio, and built a bootleg AM radio transmitter, and I put it on the air. I mean, I built the thing. It was the ugliest thing you'd ever want to lay eyes on. I mean, it looked like an old TV chassis you'd drug out of the junk, but it worked very well. And with that in mind, I had a visit paid to me by the head of the Detroit field office of the FCC, who came to the house and knocked on the door and said, "I want to see this radio station." And my mom says, "Oh, he's downstairs in the basement in his room. Go on down there." So it was it was fun. Then you could grab a television chassis and you could build a transmitter out of it very easily. Transmitters were just easy to build. And I remember I built a CW transmitter that way too. And I can't remember. I seemed like I used sweep tubes, or I used a sweep tube for the amplifier.
Right.
Don't know what I used for the oscillator. Can't remember. But that was TV repair shops, the thing of the past, almost, I guess.
My uncle was a great TV repairman, and I remember when solid state and stuff started coming out, and you start replacing those modules. Boy, he hated that. He grew up World War II era with tubes. But I had a similar experience in college. We built a radio station actually, and I think it had a 6146 or something in a final, and we were able to find a crystal in a broadcast band, and we never got a call though from the FCC. I guess we just didn't keep it on long enough.
Oh, I was right in the Detroit metropolitan area. I was in Dearborn Heights, Michigan, and within miles of the monitoring station. So that was quite an experience. But this fellow Richard Cotton, who was also a ham, and the story is kind of funny because he came on rather stern. And he told me, because I was just, gosh, I couldn't have been like but 12 years old. I mean, I was messing around with stuff way too young. He said to me, "Son," he said, "I don't know whether you're aware of this," he said, "but I could take everything, I could impound everything in this room, including your bunk beds." it really scared the fire out of me. So then he started asking me how much power it ran. And I did the simple plate voltage times plate current and said, "Well, I suppose it's about 50% efficient." And he seemed to be rather impressed. And he told me, he said, "Well, here's what I want you to do." He said, "I want you to back this thing down to 5 watts input. That's it. No more than that." And he said, and he gave me a quadrant that I could operate in. He said, you can, I don't want to hear it beyond Inkster Road, Michigan Avenue, Van Bord, and Rhonda Telegraph. He said, "You keep it in that square. If I hear it outside that square, you're in trouble." He said, "If I hear any bad language on the air or any cutting up or anything like that, anything that's in bad taste, if I hear any of that, I'm coming back." He said, "Now, I don't want you to tell anybody I was here. And as far as I'm concerned, this never happened." And he said, but you need to get yourself a ham license.
Yeah, that's kind of funny, interesting that he let you do that. I was expecting they were going to shut you down.
Well, you know, I would have thought that, you know, but of course now, see, I was an only child. I'd lost my dad, so it was just me and my mom, and that was it, living there. And I think he kind of saw that, and I think he saw the energy and the interest and everything I had. But here, the story isn't over. He went down to the local radio club and told some guys, and at that time it was the Motor City Radio Club. They was W8MRM was the call sign of their station, of the club station. And he told a bunch of those guys, "I want you to make a ham out of this boy," he said, "or I'm going to start writing tickets." At least that's,
you know,
what
it's, it's interesting how young people can do those kind of things, like you were just talking about doing. And you know, I remember, again, I just turned 16, just got my driver's license, and my hometown was about 50 miles from Memphis, Tennessee, and back in those days, the FCC came to Memphis four times a year to give the test, the general test, and 16-year-old, never really
we'll
been
be
out,
right,
you know,
back with our guest, Tom Medlin, W5KUB, right after this.
I parked at the federal building, went in, and stood in front of this very stern, mean-looking FCC lady, I think, and I passed a test here. And I remember, you know, some much older guys here, you know, they took the code test and were complaining about, that code was no good. And I tell you, that lady, she really set them straight there. Nobody got any... Nobody slipped by with her there. That was back in the olden days when you had to go to the FCC to take the test. And like I say, in Memphis, it was four times a year. And if I had not passed the test, I guess I would have had to come back, 3 months later and take it again. But I passed it. And not many years after, I upgraded to advance and to extra class.
We'll be right back with our guest, Tom Medlin, W5KUB. Right after this.
If you like to travel, if you're a camper, if you'd like to take your ham radio hobby with you when you go, you need the Trans World Antennas TW2010L Backpacker Antenna. It's the same exact antenna as the TW2010 Adventurer, with the exception it's been streamlined for the person who likes to camp and travel light. It's the same rugged antenna structure as the TW2010, with the black powder coating and stealth design. We all know the TW2010 is a great permanent or portable antenna, but the TW2010L Backpacker takes portable and emergency operation to an entirely new level. It's especially suited for the amateur operator who loves backpacking, cycling, camping. It makes easy access and quick setup possible for the most extenuating emergencies. TW2010L Backpacker Antenna is available now for a limited time for only $399.95. That's right, $399.95. Pricing includes backpacker, quadra stand, carrying bag, and free shipping in the continental United States through FedEx Ground. That's transworldantennas.com. And now for a limited time, only $399.95. That's transworldantennas.com.
As a QSO listener, we really need to hear from you. We would like to know you're listening. We'd like to know how you feel about the radio show. We'd like to hear some suggestions. What would you like to hear more of? What would you like to hear less of? And you can do that by going to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. There's a place that says email Ted or some such nonsense as that's on the page. Click on that button and send me an email, because I want to know what you think. I want to know what you want to hear more of, less of, what you think about the program, where you're listening. How is it coming in on the shortwave? Is it coming in real good where you're at? And what about the time? Is this a good time? Would you prefer it on at a better time? And what would that better time be? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you, and we'll even send you a QSL card if you'll send us an email. Once again, go to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. And where it says Contact Ted, just click on that little tab and send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening to QSO. And now back to our guest on QSO, Tom Medlin, W5KUB.
You know, by doing that, we were able to share, ham radio experience. There's a lot of people in this country we found that, you know, I mean, a lot of us are blessed. We can go to Huntsville and Dayton. This will be my 29th straight year to Dayton. A lot of us can go, you know, but there are a lot of people in this country that can't go. There are young people that, you know, don't have a way. They don't have the money. There are older people that don't have the money. There are people that can't get off work. There are just a million reasons, you know, health reasons. And we found that by broadcasting this, there is a certain type viewer out there that is interested in participating at these ham fests without having to go. People have sent me pictures, photographs, where they have taken a picture of their widescreen TV in their den. It showed us on their TV. So I guess somehow they took their computer and, you know, piped a signal into their TV in there, and they probably watched us on the big screen TV all weekend, and that kind of impressed me. It kind of looked like we were a real TV station.
You're right. There's a lot of folks that can't come out to the Ham Fest. And one thing we found when we were doing the broadcast from Huntsville, doing live on the two shortwave stations, I could not believe the number of people that were tuning in and listening to that, and the ones that got excited over it and said, "Hey, you know, we're going to come next year. You know, we're coming. We're not going to miss out on this." You know. Because it was like a virtual, you know, who's who of ham radio. The folks were there from the ARRL, and you know, we had, you know, Bob Heil was there, and Chip, and I'm trying to think who all else was there. Bill Pasternak was there. I mean, just everybody you can think of, you know. Dennis Machenbacher from Yaesu, and
right.
Everybody was there.
And all those guys were on our video, and I guess the world saw them, and we did a great interview with Bob Heil in Huntsville this last year. A very enjoyable interview with him, and you know, I think it just helps, you know, promote the hobby a lot. I know, like you said, there were people that watched it, said, "Hey, you know, I think I want to come there next year." You know, and Huntsville's a really nice size ham fest that seems to be holding steady or growing. I hope Dayton starts picking back up. The last few years, I've noticed that, you know, attendance has slacked off, but it's still, I guess, the largest there is around. And of course, you know, we're going to go. We're going to go every year. We kind of make that a city slicker trip. The same guys that we all go from here every year, and it's kind of our week away from home to do something crazy. And we go, you know, big time, and we set up our shelter out in a flea market, and we set the computers up and the cameras up, and we walk around and try to show people what it's like there. We've had a little difficulty the last year or two inside the building, in and out, because of the signal. Hopefully this year we're going to try to correct that. But, you know, we broadcast starting again with our drive. We go up on the Wednesday prior to Hamfest. We broadcast that 10-hour drive. And then on Thursday morning at Dayton, we will start setting our shelter up. That usually takes a few hours. And the camera's rolling then, and we're live on Thursday. People see us setting up and building our shelter and getting ready to, you know, we every year we have to endure the hailstorm, the rains, the floods, the snow, the sleet, and the sunburn. You know, every year we have to. So they can see why we're putting up the shelter that we do. And then on Friday and Saturday and a half a day Sunday, we try to broadcast the entire show. And then, of course, we will broadcast a 10-hour drive back to Memphis Sunday afternoon, starting about noontime. I forgot to mention, on Thursday, after we set up, a lot of times we'll drive up to Mendelssohn's, or we'll go to the Air Force Museum, and we'll take the camera with us up to those areas. And that's something really good to see. The Air Force Museum, I'll put it that way, is something that if you haven't seen it, you've got plenty of things to look at there, and you could spend an entire day there.
Now, let me ask you this question. Do they have any UFOs in that Air Force Museum, by any chance?
You know, I'm thinking, I don't think there are any. Well, you know, there may be. there may be some UFOs in there, but maybe it was misidentified or something. But
misidentified.
I think they do touch on the UFO theme there. I think they probably say something about it, you know, in one of their rooms, and maybe have some pictures or show some things that maybe were mistaken or whatever. But I believe that is touched upon in one of their areas. But there's plenty of aircraft and rockets in space, and you know, it goes back to, you know, the early days of flight, and even the late model things that are out there flying today. It covers, there's acres and acres and acres there at the Air Force Museum. I don't think you can see it in a day.
Well, let me ask you this. As far as amateur radio is concerned right now, what are your favorite operating modes? Where would we find you on the air?
Well, you know, I can be about anywhere. I like to build and design equipment more than I operate. Now, the past 6 months, I have taken on a satellite operation through some of the, you know, low Earth orbiting satellites, AO-51 and some of the others. So I've started working some of this. Most recently, the past month, I have been working through the International Space Station. It has several different modes. It has a UHF-VHF repeat mode that you can talk through it and back to the ground as it goes over and talk to other hams. It has a direct mode where occasionally an astronaut will come on here and talk to you. Most of the crew on the space missions have amateur license. And another mode they have is packet on the International Space Station. To give you a story of how frustrating it kind of is for me right now, I've got a friend, he's 12 years old in Houston, and I got him interested in satellite work about 6 or 8 months ago. And just the other day, he sent me an audio tape where he talked to Mike, the commander of the International Space Station the other day. And you never know when the crew is going to get on there and talk to you. Probably about 100 pounds a piece. you can't even, one person can't even pick them up. I mean, so, you know, we start planning for that. We start planning how we're going to get internet connectivity in the flea market. We've got a couple different ways we can do that. Of course, it's going to have to be wireless. What we do basically is we will provide a link, and I'll explain again in very short terms on how the system works from one end to the other. We basically run a very small webcam on a laptop, and it can be, you know, as cheap as a $30 webcam, you know, at one of the computer stores, or it can be a more expensive cam, and it plugs into the laptop. Then a laptop needs internet access. And we'll provide that with some type broadband wireless card or some type local wireless internet service in the Dayton area. So we bring the video and audio into the laptop right there. It's transmitted via the internet down to Miami, Florida. And that's where I have a major international telecommunications provider that has given us space to put a server in the unlimited bandwidth. So we stream into that server, one stream only, make it simple. And then if we have 300 viewers, there's 300 streams that come out of that server and hit the internet. It would be almost impossible to do without the server, and it would sure be impossible to serve more than probably, you know, 10 or 15 people, you know, without that bandwidth. So we're in really good shape as far as, and we've really been lucky as far as what people have been able to help us do. And that's kind of how it gets there.
Well, you know, it's a funny thing because you actually have the bandwidth to back up what you're doing. And sad enough to say, there's a lot of folks that claim they have big bandwidth, But streaming is very, very taxing, and it's expensive. I mean, bandwidth is expensive. And there's a lot of folks making claims out there, and they just don't have the bandwidth to back it up. Although they leave everybody with the impression that they've got, you know, thousands of people watching or listening to their stream. In reality, it's just not the case at all.
You know, a DS3 circuit, you know, to get 30 megabits, I mean, you could spend $10,000 a month easily on that circuit. The thing about it is, of course, we don't need that bandwidth, but a few days, you know, a couple times a year, it's not like we're using it all the time. So I think that's one of the reasons that we're so lucky to have it. The people that provide it to us know that, you know, it's for a good cause, and it's not all the time. It's just a couple times, you know, occasionally during the year.
Well, sir, I really appreciate you coming on board and talking with us. This has been fun, and I want everybody to be on the lookout here when you're on from Dayton. And I'm assuming that you will also be back at Huntsville this year.
Yeah, we will. We'll be there. I'm sure they'll want us to come back, and we will be in Dayton. See, Huntsville is in August. Dayton will be in May.
As far as I know, we're going to be broadcasting for both of those ham fests, so we'll have to get together. You're listening to QSO. It's All About Ham Radio, brought to you by Transworld Antennas, Heil Sound, Gigaparts, PMC Science, Tux-Support.com, Markham Street Films, and Martin Lynch & Sons, your European distributors for the finest in amateur radio equipment. Since the beginning of time and across the history of radio broadcasting, there's only one radio station that has ever earned a full-length documentary dedicated totally and completely to its rise to a pinnacle never before achieved by any radio station and its fall. This is a story of what happened when the most legendary programming genius of all time takes the reins of an obscure Canadian radio station in the small city of Windsor, Canada, and creates a radio legend that rocked the Motor City, the USA, and half a continent.
That does it for Big Tom Rivers, 1971, and Hank O'Neill starts a brand new year next at CKLW. For the last time this year, I will say to you, rock on, mother!
Ladies and gentlemen, the beat goes on.
CKLW.
2020 news guys, they were disc jockeys without music. Bum, bum, bum. And everybody knew that something was going to happen. You knew something was going to happen.
Motor City Mayor Roman Gribbs has a mad on for an unidentified rapist, a butcher knife-wielding pervert cornered a secretary in the elevator at Detroit City County Building and rode her to the vacant seventh floor and proceeded to sexually assault her. Guards are now being considered for future surveillance of the crime-stained seventh floor. Lee Marshall, 2020 News.
Now, Markham Street Productions takes you there as you relive the rise and fall of
the big HCKLW, the Motor City.
You can now own your own copy of this new DVD documentary, Radio Revolution, the rise and fall of the Big 8 from Markham Street Productions. The special edition DVD of this award-winning feature-length documentary includes extra scenes, outtakes, photos, and special features. Radio Revolution, the rise and fall of the Big 8, is now available for only $29.95 plus shipping. Go to RadioRevolutionDVD.com. That's RadioRevolutionDVD.com. Order now while supply lasts. RadioRevolutionDVD.com. That's RadioRevolutionDVD.com.
And the hits just keep on coming.
CKLW.
Have you been looking for a place to put a website? Have you thought about putting your own website up, or possibly you've got your own right now and you're not real happy? The name to think about and remember is Tux-Support.com. Tux like Tuxedo, the little penguin, the mascot for Linux, the Linux operating system. Tux-Support.com. Just remember that name. If you're looking for a website for your amateur radio club, your church, your organization, your business, or even a personal site, you need a place to put that site, and you want a simple way to put it together and maintain it. One word or one company to remember, that's tux-support.com. Tux-support.com. That's tux-support.com. Tux-support.com. The only name you need to know when it comes to your website.
My guest is Scott Morrison. His call sign is K-A-3-D-R-R. And Scott has a blog up on the internet. And it's ka3drr.blogspot.com. And Scott's into all kinds of things, and we're going to talk about a few of those things right now. And the one thing I did notice, that Scott, I noticed that you Twitter. Everybody keeps saying, do you Twitter? You know, and of course, I didn't know what that meant. I thought there was, you know, I didn't think we were allowed to discuss things like that in public or over the radio. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the Blogspot and talk about some of the things that you're up to on the blog. And we'll explain what it is to Twitter here just in a little bit, too.
Great. Ted, it's great to be here this afternoon, and thank you for having me on your show. It's a great honor. And right now, I'd have to say that I have over 2,000 tweets, as a Twitter message is known as. The idea behind a tweet is to let people know what you are doing and take off from there. That covers a lot of ground when you ask a person, what are you doing? And the specific focus on Twitter is a group of ham radio operators. That number we don't have right now, but at least I could say with some assurance that there's well over 250 hams up on Twitter, give or take, you know, maybe 25 or so. And what we're doing there is we're sharing information that is relevant to the hobby. For example, just this morning, we had a discussion about putting a repeater on the moon. Now, as far out as that may seem, one of our ham radio operators went out there and did the research and actually found that up on Wikipedia that there is some interest expressed in that. And one of the questions that came up is, how would you be able to put a repeater on the moon? And we started to work on a solution for just that problem. I know that legacy media has framed Twitter in ways that probably isn't very appealing. However, for me, one may see that Twitter is the 21st century railroad telegraph. And what we were up there and what we are doing there is basically groundbreaking. The technology is new, the idea is new, and we're all working hard to figure that out. And basically, Twitter is in its infancy, and 5 years from now, as that begins to mature, I'm sure its appeal will parallel just that.
Look at all of as many folks that are running around with pocket PCs now, and I have one. You know, I mean, we have internet on there. We've got email on the thing and text messaging. Anything you could want is on this thing, including programs. I can listen to streaming audio from the internet on my pocket PC. And we're experimenting with some streams here, so it's kind of handy to see if one's up or down or whatever. And then, of course, on my pocket PC, I can take Log Me In, and I can log into the server from my pocket PC anywhere and restart the streaming server or anything like that. And this is technology that's like, you know, when we were kids. Of course, when I was a kid, it was a lot further back in time than it was when you were a kid, Scott. But when I was a kid, if someone would have shown me something like that, it would have probably, I don't think I'd ever got over it. You know, I would have, that had been it for me. But to think that from a pocket PC, you get on and you send out, it's almost like a group text message on the internet for anyone that's inside that group. So if you want to tell everybody, you know, and of course the whole object of it is, and for folks that don't know, is to tell everybody what you're doing. What you're doing right now, you know, and if everybody does that and they're all part of a group, that produces a collective interest, and it's so immediate. It's like, right, like you said, it's the telegraph, you know, it's the telegraph of the 21st century, you know, where you can actually tell somebody that I'm in the middle of this right now, you know, and I don't know. That's just, I think it's very, very cool. But what about your blog? You've got a blog up.
You're listening to QSO, and we'll be right back with our guest, Scott Morrison, KA3DRR, right after this. If you already own a TW2010 Adventurer or Backpacker antenna, and you want to use the antenna on 40 meters, you can get the Trans World Adventurer 4040 Array Box in center section only, right now only $139.95. That puts you on 40 meters, and you're dealing with the exact same antenna structure that has made the TW2010 Trans World Adventurer so famous. The black powder coating, the stealth, the way the antenna is able to hide, and in addition to that, it's portable if you want to take it with you. Of course, you can get it with a deluxe travel bag. It's just fantastic. Go to the website and check it out, transworldantennas.com. That's transworldantennas.com. If you can't remember Trans World Antennas, just remember to go to our website at QSO, tedrandall.com, TEDRANDALL.com, and click on the link for Trans World Antennas. Take a look at this brand new Adventurer 4040. As a QSO listener, we really need to hear from you. We would like to know you're listening. We'd like to know how you feel about the radio show. We'd like to hear some suggestions. What would you like to hear more of? What would you like to hear less of? And you can do that by going to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. There's a place that says email Ted or some such nonsense as that's on the page. Click on that button and send me an email, because I want to know what you think. I want to know what you want to hear more of, less of, what you think about the program, where you're listening. How is it coming in on the shortwave? Is it coming in real good where you're at? And what about the time? Is this a good time? Would you prefer it on at a better time? And what would that better time be? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll even send you a QSL card if you'll send us an email. Once again, go to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. And where it says Contact Ted, just click on that little tab and send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening to QSO. Since the beginning of time and across the history of radio broadcasting, there's only one radio station that has ever earned a full-length documentary dedicated totally and completely to its rise to a pinnacle never before achieved by any radio station, and its fall. This is a story of what happened when the most legendary programming genius of all time takes the reins of an obscure Canadian radio station in the small city of Windsor, Canada, and creates a radio legend that rocked the Motor City, the USA, and half a continent.
Led us from Big Tom Rivers, 1971, and Hank O'Neill starts a brand new year next at CKLW. For the last time this year, I will say to you, rock on, mother! Ladies and gentlemen, the beat goes on.
CKLW.
2020 news guys, they were disc jockeys without music. Bum, bum, bum. And everybody knew that something was going to happen. You knew something was going to happen.
Motor City Mayor Roman Gribbs has a mad on for an unidentified rapist, a butcher knife-wielding pervert cornered a secretary in the elevator at Detroit City County Building and rode her to a vacant seventh floor and proceeded to sexually assault her. Guards are now being considered for future surveillance of the crime-stained seventh floor. Lee Marshall, 2020 News.
Now, Markham Street Productions takes you there as you relive the rise and fall of
the Big HCKLW, the Motor City.
You can now own your own copy of this new DVD documentary, Radio Revolution,
The Rise and Fall of the Big Eight from Markham Street Productions. The special edition DVD of this award-winning feature-length documentary includes extra scenes, outtakes, photos, and special features. Radio Revolution, The Rise and Fall of the Big Eight is now available for only $29.95 plus shipping. Go to RadioRevolutionDVD.com. That's RadioRevolutionDVD.com. Order now while supply lasts. RadioRevolutionDVD.com. That's RadioRevolutionDVD.com.
And the hits just keep on coming.
CKLW, the Motor City.
You're listening to QSO. It's all about ham radio. Brought to you by Transworld Antennas, Heil Sound, Gigaparts, PMC Science, Tux-Support.com, Markham Street Films, and Martin Lynch & Sons, your European distributors for the finest in amateur radio equipment. And now back to our guest, Scott Morrison, KA3DRR, right here on QSO. And tell us a little bit about what is found in that blog. What are you into there?
Yes, indeed, Ted. To give you a little bit of history behind KA3DRR.blogspot.com, the idea is I'm a re-entry ham radio operator. That is that I took roughly 10 years off from the hobby and came back 2 years ago. And when I did so, it seemed that we were on the cusp of change, and probably still we are still there. And one of the things that I did notice were that there were lots of ham radio operators who were blogging. And I looked around the internet, and I checked out various websites, and what I found was blogging was the best suit for me to be able to transmit my experience out into the ham radio blog sphere and to reach as many people as possible. Now, let me go ahead and give you a quick tour of KA3DRR. If when you click over to the blog, what you're going to find, and let's think in terms of legacy media and a newspaper above the fold. Above the fold, immediately you're going to catch the title, which is KA3DRR Radio Sport, low power, low profile, at 50 watts. And then you're going to catch off onto the right-hand side is a picture of myself at my station. Above that is a bumper sticker. It says Contest On. To the left-hand side, you're going to catch my most recent post. And for today, I just installed yesterday afternoon a low-pass filter into my system to deal with and mitigate any potential RFI, EMI problems that are out there. We can go into that as well. And next, on the right-hand side, you'll go down and you'll see this symbol, this orange and white symbol that looks like an antenna transmitting. And next to it, it says subscribe in the reader. This is important because what that is called is really simple syndication, RSS. And what that allows you to do, if you're interested in the blog, in fact, it is probably better than your traditional type of magazine subscriptions. You click on that RSS symbol, and it'll take you over to multiple readers at where I'm running through called feedburner.com. And it'll allow you to subscribe to the blog into your reader. For example, if you're using Google Reader, and then whenever I make an update to the blog, a new posting, it will show up in your reader, so much like your mailbox. So the big transformation on the internet has been instead of we going out to the internet to get our information, we are now having that information delivered directly into our readers.
So it comes to you as soon as you make a major change up there and resubmit your feed. Everybody on the receive end gets a notice. They know there's something's happening. Something different going on here.
Absolutely. You're going to, if in your reader, it'll show up next to basically your it'll show KA3DRR. It'll be in bold print, and you will note that Scott must have written a new blog posting, and you can click on that, and whatever I have written is delivered directly into your reader, and that aspect RSS. Is fundamentally changing the way content in media is being exchanged and delivered over the internet. As well, when you further down the page, I also would like to communicate the number of RSS subscribers. Currently, there are 588 people across the globe who are reading my blog. The next thing you'll also note is I put up a Twitter counter. This is an introduction for basically just to demonstrate and ease and provide some comfort. Okay, we have 275 followers over at Twitter. The next thing is you're going to find is called Fidget Live Traffic Map. Here, one could see from all over the globe who is reading what and in what country and what specific post that person is reading. And how that is done is through the Internet Service Provider address. That's where that information stops there at the ISP. But they are able to collect the data that says from the location and what people are reading. And then as we continue to scroll down the page, you'll also find there are 10 other bloggers who are following KA3DRR. And as well, I just recently put up what's called Post Rank. And here I have a service that is grading my post. For example, the most recent grade was 8.2, and that was for thank you for teaching me an important radio sport lesson. The next one below that was 7.5. That was Ham Radio Deluxe, and in that is free amateur radio software for Windows. So I'm providing an idea of basically what the blog is doing, how people are responding to the blog, and it's just a nice little additional way to quantify the activity, or we would have to say the social activity that happens around ka3drr.blogspot.com. I'm seeing that there's just this sense of urgency now that our numbers, statistically speaking, are on a downward trend, and that can't be good for the hobby.
You're listening to QSO, and we'll be right back with our guest Scott Morrison, KA3DRR, right after this. Week after week, you hear us talk about Transworld antennas, and you hear us talk about the TW2010, the 4040, the Backpacker, and all these different antennas. Of course, the TW2010 Adventurer came first. Folks were amazed at its performance. Then they introduced the Backpacker, and now the 4040. Go to EHAM and read the reviews on the TW2010. Just go to EHAM and read those reviews. Now, you can do that by going to transworldantennas.com. Just go to transworldantennas.com. Transworld Antennas, one word. Go to transworldantennas.com. There's a link on that page that'll take you right straight to the EHAM reviews, or you can just go to EHAM yourself. And if you're a ham, you know how to get to EHAM on the internet. Just Google it. You'll get there. And read the reviews. see what other amateur radio operators are saying about this antenna. Thank you. Have you been looking for a place to put a website? Have you thought about putting your own website up, or possibly you've got your own right now and you're not real happy? The name to think about and remember is tux-support.com. Tux like tuxedo, the little penguin, the mascot for Lennox, the Lennox operating system. Tux-support.com. Just remember that name. If you're looking for a website for your amateur radio club, your church, your organization, your business, or even a personal site, you need a place to put that site, and you want a simple way to put it together and maintain it. One word or one company to remember, that's tux-support.com. Tux-support.com. That's tux-support.com. Tux-support.com. The only name you need to know when it comes to your website.
As a QSO listener, we really need to hear from you. We would like to know you're listening. We'd like to know how you feel about the radio show. We'd like to hear some suggestions. What would you like to hear more of? What would you like to hear less of? And you can do that by going to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. There's a place that says email Ted or some such nonsense as that's on the page. Click on that button and send me an email, because I want to know what you think. I want to know what you want to hear more of, less of, what you think about the program, where you're listening. How is it coming in on the shortwave? Is it coming in real good where you're at? And what about the time? Is this a good time? Would you prefer it on at a better time? And what would that better time be? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll even send you a QSL card if you'll send us an email. Once again, go to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. And where it says Contact Ted, just click on that little tab and send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening to QSO. And now back to our guest, Scott Morrison, KA3DRR, right here on QSO. Well, you know, it depends on who's looking at the numbers, because I've got friends at the ARRL say that the numbers are actually up, you know, and I've heard it bantered about that we have anywhere from 600,000 to 800,000 licensed radio amateurs here in the USA. You know, the numbers that themselves may be on an upward trend. But, on the other hand, the ARRL membership is not necessarily on an upward trend, you know. And I think a lot of that has to do with, it's not, I don't think there's anything wrong with the league. I think that what it is the type of guys that are coming into ham radio have yet to be attracted into that arena, if that makes any sense at all. I mean, they're aware it's there. They think it's cool. You know, oh, God, I'd like to visit W1AW someday, you know. But the thought of membership is just not top of mind, you know. And then you go to ham fests, and a lot of the ham fest activities are down. You know, you go into a ham fest, and there's not as many people there. They seem to have shrunk, and although I went to Dalton, and I don't know if it was because it was raining outside or what, boy, but it was wall-to-wall people inside those buildings. You could hardly get in front of a table. It was definitely a seller's market, you know. But a lot of it, I think, is that I don't think there's been enough time for the new folks to really kind of get a feel for things. And I think this is where the blogs and the activity on the internet has the opportunity to pique the interest and to bring those folks in to areas where they're not yet familiar. And a lot of folks, they're afraid of what they don't know. You know, if they don't, they look at something and they don't have any idea what that is. And the last thing you want to do is ask a question and reveal your ignorance to somebody else, you know? Especially if it's something really basic, you know. I mean, and you know it's relatively basic, but you haven't got any idea of what that thing is or how it works. Lord knows, that's the last question that you want to ask in a group of people. Do you not agree with me?
Ted, that a question I don't know. Something I learned while I was serving in the Air Force, and I'd have an inspector come to me and ask me a question that I didn't know. And we were taught that the best thing to say is, I'll get you an answer for that question. And, you know, then we had to go out and get that answer and get that back to the inspector. So sometimes if there are things that I don't know, I would like to keep an open mind that, well, what's in there? You know, what's inside that software-defined radio? And at least be able to look at it and say, well, I just don't think that's for me. One thing I've learned since my reentry is that there's not going to be all things in ham radio for me. And what I have done is I am passionate about radio sport. I enjoy sitting down and with my Yaesu FT100 interface to my computer with my N1MM contest logger and working as many stations that I can, running 45 watts into a doublet that's sandwiched between two condominiums. That's my fun. I do have some goals in things like that within the hobby, and eventually I would like to get there. So there is, though, when we go and we look around, there are concerns. Certainly the numbers can go either way, though really asking ourselves at the gut level what's going on, and we just don't see that much millennial youth in attendance at our ham fests and at our club meetings.
Well, and it's all foreign to them. it's you know, they take them into a ham fest, they're going to look around and go, what is all this? You know, what is this? I refuse to believe. I hear people say, and I've heard some of our older constituents, and you have to understand, I'm part of that group, say, well, you know, computers have taken over, and they've just taken over all the interest. Young people are not interested in ham radio anymore. It's just all computers. Well, you know what? That's not necessarily true. I mean, the problem is, once again, it's not top of mind. You know, they have never been exposed to it. You know, most young folks have never seen, or they don't know anything about ham radio. And I'll tell you, out in the public, where I'm dealing right now with an awful lot of shortwave broadcasting, shortwave airtime and whatnot, and I run up on people and I say something about shortwave, and I might as well be talking about Egyptian. They have no idea what I'm talking about. They are totally, completely unaware that a service like that even exists. Some of the older folks will relate it. You know, you walk up, well, you mean like a ham radio? I said, no, it's not a ham radio. You know, ham radio and shortwave share a lot of the same frequencies, but ham radio is different than shortwave listening or shortwave broadcasting. You know, and boy, talk about trying to get that concept across. You know, I mean, it's absolutely, you know, we've moved away. Our technology has moved ahead so far that a lot of this stuff that hasn't kept up with the technology has been left in the dust. And that's the reason why young people, I'll tell you, I think that young kids, you show them ham radio and all the aspects of it, they will latch on to something that fascinates them. I mean, how in the world could somebody even compare ham radio to stamp collecting? You know?
There is somebody who did just that. The hottest topic going on our Twitter group, Twitter cluster, Twitter network is a presentation that was made by N0DOS at Ignite Portland. And he did a presentation on ham radio in the 21st century. His enthusiasm, his energy, his excitement, in the way that he presented what we were doing in ham radio to an auditorium just packed full of geeks. And you could hear in the crowd the excitement that the feeling for ham radio. And he spun up our hobby in a way that the message could be understood. And He did a marvelous job doing that. N0DOS, and it was Ignite Portland, and it was the hottest topic going for all of us. And when you visit my blog over at ka3drr.blogspot.com, you will note that I have another column called Ham Radio Blogsphere. And scrolling down that blogsphere, you'll come across another ham radio operator who is authoring Roteno Labs. And he has that video up on his blog. And I would really encourage folks to see that. It was just a tremendous effort on the part of N0DOS.
Okay, now he has a video of what, his presentation?
Yes. It was, I don't know if N0DOS's presentation is up on YouTube. You could go there and just search the call sign, or even go and do a Google search on Ignite Portland. Just a few avenues to be able to find that video. And once you watch that, you just come away feeling energized about ham radio. He just packed, it was a great presentation.
Well, now, okay, now you said the other fellow, you mentioned somebody else, and I missed that. I had something going on here, and my attention wandered just for a second. The other fellow had put something up on the internet, and I'm totally, if I could hit rewind.
Sure, I'm scrolling through right now to bring up, it's Roteno Labs, and he runs a blog as well, and I'm looking for that over on the right-hand side of my blog right now.
Now, on Roteno Labs, what is up there? What is it that you were calling our attention to?
Yes, when you go over to his website, you'll be able to find the N0DOS video.
Oh,
he
okay.
He has that there. And his at Roteno Labs, his bumper sticker is Dream, Design, Build, and Repeat. And he's a ham radio operator.
Very good. You know, something else. Now, let me go down a little different road here, because we've got a lot of territory to cover that we want to talk about yet. But now, as folks get older, you know, they retire. A lot of people sell the big house they're in, and they move into an apartment. They move into a condo. They move into a high-rise building. And in a lot of cases, they have to very painfully leave the ham radio hobby behind, unless they want to try to stick an antenna out a window, or operate some way. But with the technology now, with TCP/IP and the way rigs are controlled by means of computer, it's very possible for a person to put a rig at some location where they can have it. And that could be at a friend. It could be a club station. It could be just about any combination where you can stick up an antenna and a radio. There's a lot of places that if you were to ask, they would not mind at all, because of the public service involved in it, to allow a person to put a radio in a closet, and an antenna outside, along with an internet connection. And those folks can continue to operate from a high-rise apartment, from some location that would not allow or permit them to have an antenna. And they can still stay on the air and operate on a daily basis and not miss a lick. But they're going to have to be dependent on the new technology, if that makes any sense.
Ted, in fact, remote operating is probably the least utilized possibility in ham radio. And I won't be surprised in 5 years from now that we don't see remote operating itself up into the forefront of ham radio attention. That is a niche of our hobby that is underutilized and has the greatest potential for folks who are in the dense urban pack and not able to put up efficient antennas. For myself, I frame that in a way that that's a challenge, and be able to, you know, put up my doublet between the two condos and get out there and operate. If that's not the case, there are many other avenues. Another is remote operating. I do believe that's going to become very big as more folks are moving into the cities and such. And the other part is to look at our machines, our computers, as another variation of ham radio. In fact, my computer is down here in the Shackadelic, and it's connected wireless to our wireless router up on the first floor.
Well, you know, I guess the thing of it is I watched the broadcasting industry where we had turntables. Commercials were on reel-to-reel. Later, they advanced to cart machines, and then later on, you know, we played CDs, and then we still use these little cartridges that look like 8-track tape cartridges that you'd play in a car.
Uh-huh.
You know, and all the commercials and jingles and all that kind of stuff was on there. Now everything jumped to the computer. So now, inside of a radio station, all the accounting is on computer, all the billing is done on computer, the music is stored on computer. The actual studio operation is done on computer. When you record phone calls, it's on computer. There isn't anything you do inside of a radio station that does not come off of a hard drive. And, of course, that did not exist years ago. And my two sons and I were managing a station, and we used to log in through Log Me In and run the whole thing. From home, we could drop in a weather forecast. We could do it. Anything you could do at the studio, we could do it from the house. You know, so it's a different time. I think it's time we embrace that stuff, especially with the advent of Echolink. Gives you a good example of how efficiently remote operation can be, because you're linking, you know, remote repeaters in from everywhere under the sun, and you're talking over the internet through TCP/IP. So it's a whole new thing. Now, I'll tell you what. And I don't want to go down too far a different road, but one of the things that has really intrigued me is this little company out in Cookeville, Tennessee. They've hired engineering folks, and they took on the task of creating an antenna that is extremely efficient, but is small and is stealth. And I have been so amazed. My son is using this. You know, he just got his general here not too long ago. He's got one of these things. And, of course, the first time I saw it, I didn't know what it was. And when I walked right by it, and someone said, look at that. And I looked at that, and I said, what is that thing? Okay, I've been in ham radio for how long? And I looked at that, and I did not recognize it as an antenna.
Yes.
Well, it's portable. They black powder coat this thing. I mean, there's people have put these things on their balcony of their apartment and hung flower pots on them. You know, I mean, it's like you don't know what it is. You can't tell what it is. And I felt once I learned how efficient this little antenna was, and I learned how little it cost and how portable, you put a little black zip bag and you carry it with you where you go. I mean, it was just, I thought, this is an antenna for this period of time in which there's so many people in apartments. There are so many people dealing with restrictions in neighborhoods where these neighborhood associations are saying you can't put as much as even a satellite dish outside. I mean, it's they want to make the neighborhood all cosmetically immaculate so that every house looks the same. And, you know, the thought of a tower and a beam in the backyard would make these people have, you know, double coronaries. So when this little antenna company came up, of course, the antennas are built by handicapped people. And it just blew me away. And so I immediately got those folks on the air as sponsors, and of course, they've been with us ever since, and it's amazing. It's just amazing. You go up on eHam and you read all these reviews, and the people just rave about this thing. Well, see, when technology is pushed to its limit, you can really and truly do what seems to be impossible. But you have to accept and embrace the technology. And I will say this: I had a hard time connecting one of these things up in the backyard and playing with it, thinking to myself, this can't possibly work, you know. And, you know, I got on 20 meters, and there was very little activity on there, and I think I was running 50 or 60 watts, and I talked to some guy in the Canary Islands, and I said, that's it. I'm sold. It works, you know. And you know, I guess when you see remote rig control and you see all the things that are going on the internet, it really is time. It really is time to pay attention to all this technology and to be able to understand that, you know, cell phone technology came from ham radio. There are so many things that we enjoy today that are a result of amateur radio operators. So we have to encourage a pool of new young people to come in, because if not, you know, in another 20 years, you know, we're still going to be carving on the caves with rocks. You know, we're not going to be operating the newer systems and the newer technologies. Now, you brought up something here, and I want to get into this because I know this is something dear to your heart, and I want you to explain what this is and how it works, and that's radio sport.
Yes. The idea and radio sport and / contesting has been around for a number of years. And the idea is, in any particular contest, is to log as many operators in a specific time frame. Recently concluded was the 2009 ARRL International DXCW contest. And in that, the event brought thousands of operators to the airwaves from all over the planet. And the purpose of that is for each of us to keep our operating skills honed, so to speak, that if ever called upon, we would be ready to handle emergency traffic. And then everything else falls out from there. For example, I enjoy being able to contact as many different countries as possible. And with the International DXCW contest, I was able to work 24 different countries running 45 watts into my wire antenna. And the other aspect of radio sport is that it pushes innovation inside the shack. When you're looking to squeeze out every watt through your antenna, you're going to go out there and develop coaxial cable that you have a low loss. You want antennas that are going to be able to sniff the ionosphere and pull in as many stations as possible with a very decent front-to-back ratio and things like that. And the overall arching theme of radio sport is to have a lot of ham radio fun. And it has its competitive components as well. I, too, like to compete. And, you know, there are articles wrote about that in the ARRL. You get up into the box where, you know, you have your top 10 finishers. Also, there is a journal devoted entirely to radio sport, the National Contest Journal. The idea is to just operate and have a lot of ham radio fun, and then everything else falls out from there.
Well, I guess my question is how did you get involved in it, and how did you learn about radio sport? Talk a little bit more about that and explain what it is, because it's a for me, you know, I had heard the term at some point, but I really never got acquainted with it. And I'm sure there's a lot of folks out there that are in the same position that I'm in. You know, you hear about things, but you don't ever hear about it in depth enough to really quite understand it and understand what it's all about, where it came from, and what the purpose of it is. So take off on a tangent from us.
Sure. Well, let's say I was introduced to radio sport back in the late 70s. I was first licensed when I was, I believe, 15 years old in 1979. I had a Heathkit DX60 and a Heathkit HR10 receiver, and I used a knife switch to be able to transmit and receive. And one of those radio sport events came up on the radar, and that was the old ARRL Novice Roundup. So I was intrigued by the idea, and I heard about what the exchange is, and there is a specific exchange, much like handling emergency traffic. And I sat down, you know, 15, 16 years old, and called CQ, and threw the knife switch, and there was somebody there. And the exchange was signal report, which was 599, and your section. And my section was Western Pennsylvania. And then all of a sudden, it was much like the phone started ringing a lot. I would call CQ again. There was another station, and I was flipping that knife switch back and forth, back and forth. I couldn't believe how fast I was acting as the relay. And then, as all things go in ham radio, the phone rang, and my dad answered, and it was one of our local mentors, or I like to call coach. And he invited me up to his station to finish out the Novice Roundup. So I went from the Heathkit DX60 and HR10 receiver and a dipole strung between two trees up to Drake TR7 and monobanders on telescoping masts. And that made a dramatic difference in what I was experiencing. And after that, I was totally sold on radio sport. And it was the excitement and the challenge of sitting in the chair for 24 hours or 48 hours, sending this exchange out and watching my points roll over, watching my multipliers increase. Multipliers could be a section, could be a country. And I really enjoyed it. And it was a lot of fun. It was just really a lot of fun. But the basic premise is that in the event of an emergency, we're all to be ready to handle emergency traffic. And radio sport helps to develop that skill. And from there, my passion for the sport has always continued. Even when I had taken time away from the hobby and I returned 2 years ago, the first thing I thought about is I want to get back into radio sport. And I don't care about how I do that or where my location is. And I did it.
Well, I'm curious about your field day activities. What do you do during field day?
Well, during the most recent field day that I attended was W6R, and that was the Paso Robles Amateur Radio Club, and I was up in Paso Robles this summer. And the idea, again, was to be able to put an emergency communications station together, or multiple stations, to be able to handle traffic. And I went up there and met a lot of great ham radio operators. One comes to mind, Ron, W6FM. And the idea, again, during field day was to be able to work as many stations across the country, handle the prescribed traffic, in this case, the number of stations we were operating at the time, and what our section is. In this particular case, that would be Santa Barbara. and two at field day, even after operating and taking a break and sitting down and listening to some of our old-timers talking about their days and what it was like operating for them, and just to be able to share in the community that's ham radio, to meet all the different people, to talk, and then also go and operate.
Well, you know, I guess when I look at over the shows that we have done here on QSO, you know, we did a live broadcast during field day, where field day locations called in from all over the country, and told us about what they were doing, and they talked about the different modes they were operating, and they talked about all the different, you know, power levels and antennas and all those kind of things that were going on. But it was really kind of funny because when we got right down to it, one of the mainstays that we discussed during Field Day Live was what they were having for dinner and who was cooking it.
Oh, yes, the food is really important. It's the food that makes the operators go. And it was the same thing while I was in the Air Force. The chow hall made the difference in that, and sitting down and having, a barbecue, and basically a potluck-style field day. It was really relaxing, just really relaxing.
Well, you know, of course, field day gives everybody a chance to take ham radio beyond the ham fest hot dog, as I call it. but it's strange you mentioned you like to sit down and listen to the older fellows talk about how they operated, the operating conditions that they were dealing with, the equipment that they were dealing with. And one of the things that we did get into when I was talking to Chris and a few of the other guys we've been talking to, and that is that Elmering is taking on a little bit different flavor in that we have all of the online stuff that we never had before. And like with your blog, the KA3DRR blog that's up, you know, I wonder how many new hams, new guys that just went out, got the technician, and some which have upgraded to general and extra, how many have done that by taking the test on eham? You know, I mean, I've talked to, I don't know how many. I said, how did you go about, well, I just took the test on eham. You know, see, this is a new form of Elmering where the Elmering can become a lot more efficient and reach a lot more people. So anyways, your blog that you put up, which covers a lot of territory, and you're set up with RSS, what kind of response have you got, and who have you found that the blog reaches, and in what ways does it reach those folks?
Well, to give you a quick, numbers breakdown, as of, today, I introduced the blog July 22nd, 2007, and I've had 4,460 views on 86 items of interest, and as well, I've had 11,613 clicks back to KA3DRR on 928 items. And I'm able to respond to my readership's interest. And the way that I'm able to do that is to measure the number of click-throughs, the number of page views. And right now, this is interesting. The number one item of interest was celebrating KA3DRR's two-year anniversary. And the next thing below that was my radio frequency ground. And number three was changes at KA3DRR. And then by able to measure the views and the number of clicks, I'm able to adjust the content on the blog, because I feel another part of the mission is that I'm providing ham radio outreach via internet. and I'm able to adjust the content that I'm putting up there on the blog, what I'm writing about, and basically the readership is taking me down this windy river and the different tributaries that we take. And I always come back to the core theme of the blog, and that's about radio sport.
Well, you know, looking at the blog, I notice some different things up there. And I don't know what the criteria is that you use other than sheer numbers of putting things up there and then seeing how people respond to it. But looking at something, I notice here you have something up here on Spider Beam US. And I'm just doing a glance at it.
Uh-huh.
Tell me why did you put that up there and what is it?
Well, Spider Beam US, another part of as a blogger is that there is always news breaking in ham radio. There's always something going on. And as you can see with that just-arrived email box this morning, is that Spider Beam is launching their operation here in the U.S. And so what I did then is to further move the news down the road. I went over to Spider Beam and took a screenshot. And then I was able to crop that, bring that up onto the blog, deliver the news via really simple syndication RSS, which then goes out to everybody's reader. And certainly we know that Spider Beam as well is really hot with de-expeditions. One of the ideas that I'm working on here for my station, given my operating location, is that I've seen the most successful models for operating have been the de-expeditions. They're the ones that have to push technology. They're the ones that have pushed the equipment. And I wanted to, and my goal here is to develop that same idea here at the station.
That's interesting. So as news comes in, different things happen that you're onto and that other folks maybe send to you by means of email, you're able to put this stuff up on the blog, and then other people have the ability to read it and follow the links and get informed as well as learn of new things coming out. I'm just scrolling down your site here, and I saw something, DX Anywhere gets Google Mashup.
Yes.
Now, what was that all about, or what is it all about?
Absolutely. DX Anywhere is a project put together by Peter, M3PHP, and his idea is to provide what a DX cluster information. So, for example, DX Central has an API fire hose. They're putting out this information that developers like Peter, M3PHP, can tap into. And DX Anywhere has taken that information from our global cluster network from places like DX Central, etc. That all feeds into his website, and then he's able to put up a map with geo tags that are showing where the station is spotted. And when you take the big picture look at that, you can also get an idea in near real time what propagation is doing on the different bands. Peter also statistically measures the number of spots per band, and up on Twitter, I subscribe to DX Anywhere, and as he has it, at 1,300, the most popular band within the last hour was 160 meters, with 231 spots. He also provides me solar data, and on it, it shows Solar Flux 69, A index 3, and the K index is 0. So I have that information feeding into Twitter, and then I can make operating decisions based on that.
Well, the latest de-expedition to use Twitter.
Yes.
Tell us a bit about that.
That was very exciting when K5D went and put their operation up on Twitter. And what they were basically doing is, again, tapping into that fire hose. I believe this was information provided by VE3SUN and his program called DX Monitor, and he has a built-in API for Twitter. So there's, like, think of it as a mesh of information, and K5D was able to put the information on Twitter as to what bands they were operating on, the number of spots per band, and the latest QSO on whichever band that was. So I had that information, and then, again, that helped me in making my operating decisions. Okay, am I going to go to 30 meters? Well, it looks like they're working more Europe right now. Maybe I need to wait and things like that. So that, you know, the helps carry over into being able to work out the family schedule, things like that.
Now, what was the latest de-expedition to use Twitter?
I'm going to try Desecillo Island, just off of Puerto Rico.
It seems to me like I had seen somewhere that that de-expedition was using Twitter, and I thought that was kind of cool. So
it added a new fun factor to chasing a de-expedition. And it was just amazing to see that the team and its team captain have become early adopters of Twitter. That was really amazing.
Well, we're getting close on time. I'd like to encourage you to talk to us just a minute about things that that you think are important, information you'd like to pass on to other hams, be they new or old-timers or whatever. And what would be your message, and what would you want to telegraph to these folks?
Ted, basically, I would like to come back to this was done by it's called The Role of Amateur Radio in the New Century, remarks by Dale N. Hatfield, W0IFO. And this was at AMRAD's 25th anniversary dinner in Falls Church, Virginia. And this was posted and brought to my attention June 17th, 2000. And in it, Mr. Hatfield discussed what is going to be the role for ham radio going into this century. He outlined what our strengths are and also what our weaknesses are. And right now, what is coming up over the horizon is competition for our spectrum. Spectrum use is going to be a very hot issue, and that is going to be because of the pressures of the mobile devices. Getting out there and just operating. Get in any means, you know, that you can get whatever radio on the air, and that we can demonstrate that we are using our spectrum efficiently and that we are using the spectrum allocations that have been given to us. Because I really felt, here I'm going to quote Dale, quote, as the rest of the telecommunication world makes the transition to digital techniques, and there are very few exceptions to that trend, the amateur service will look antiquated if it is not making progress in that direction as well. This was written in 2000. And that is the message within the mission of ka3drr.blogspot.com.
Well, very good. And a final comment I'll make, and that is this. I've noticed that around the country, and this is true, is you're driving through various cities and towns and whatnot, and you've got, say, even a two-meter rig on. There are literally hundreds and hundreds of unoccupied repeaters. And it isn't that I'm saying that people should be on talking 24 hours a day, but there's also a general tendency, and I've run into this, and that is if you get on a repeater where there's nobody talking, sometimes it seems to irritate that repeater community. And I don't know what that's all about. I've never been able to figure that out. I mean, I've had it happen more than once where I've raised a call sign up there, and God forbid you call CQ on a repeater. But if you do, you're almost asking for trouble. And I think that's an attitude that needs to change pretty quick if we are going to hold on to Spectrum. What do you think about that?
Ted, I'm 100% behind you on that. Closed communities like that are counterproductive to the future of ham radio.
Now, wait a minute. Repeat that again for me, please. I want to make sure that we've heard this correctly.
That I fully support and stand behind you, that closed communities like that are counterproductive for the future of ham radio.
Boy, can I hear an amen? Can somebody say amen out there? I want to hear this, you know. Yeah, I don't think there's no way I could put it any better. I mean, I absolutely totally believe that. And I said on previous programs that our amateur radio role, the security of our frequencies, being able to keep these frequencies, the ensuring the future of our hobby is only as strong as our fraternity. In other words, strong as we are as a group, working as a group, accepting each other as a group, and welcoming new people into the group. And I that's just how I feel about it. And
I share that.
I think that we're going to be in, you know, I hear guys say, oh, we're not in trouble. There's nothing that's threatening our frequencies, you know. And they say that with a degree of self-importance, you know. But in terms of reality, what's out there, and the people who would love to have these frequencies, commercial operations, commercial.
May I footnote that real quick?
Sure.
On that, to address that, I just ran a post yesterday. And it's called Ecom 2009. They're having a conference in San Francisco next month. And what they're doing is the bumper sticker for that is defining the post-telecom era. I'll give you this quote. This is what they wrote on Spectrum. Quote, "The fight for open spectrum will significantly determine the future of communications. What if anyone could access spectrum anywhere at any time? A world without spectrum scarcity." Unquote.
That's very, very interesting. So I think that it only behooves us as radio amateurs. At times, that's been so frustrating to me, is you plan a trip and you think, well, I'll get a chance to talk on some repeaters and meet some guys across the country. And you make your transition across the country, and it's nil. It's just nil. You log into a repeater, you give out your call sign, and nobody says anything. And I'll bring something else up, too, that was kind of interesting. Yesterday, this happened yesterday, my son had just put a new antenna on his car, HF. And he's like 24 years old. He's chief engineer for the Dave Ramsey show, and he's just totally enthralled with ham radio. And
right on.
He's operating on the frequency, and he calls me up and he says, "Hey Dad, get on and talk to me just for a second and tell me how we're doing." So I jumped in and I'm listening and whatnot. And we had to go somewhere. I can't remember where it was. So we were across town, and he wanted my other son, David, who just got his general ticket, to get on my rig at the house and get on and talk back and forth. And this was on 75. There was nobody on the frequency, absolutely nobody. And David fired the rig up. I told him what to do, and he came in and fired it up, and he was a little intimidated by it, I think. But he got on and he started talking.
Yeah.
And within a few minutes, there were a couple of old geezers that jumped in there and just started a CUSO right over the top of these two. They own the frequency. They've been there for 85 years, and they own this frequency. And I have never it was the height of rudeness that I have ever seen in my life. I had never seen anything quite like this before. These old guys just totally ignored the fact that these two younger fellows were in there operating. And I thought, this, you know, what do we got to do? Do we got to get a couple of, we've got to go back into the production of the Wolf Hong, you know, and we've got to start paying visits to these guys at their homes.
Well, and the other part is, and I'm really sad to hear that the experience that cements that permanent relationship between our hobby and the person, that the manners that the old timers, and just that you know, we own 3.925. This attitude can't be tolerated anymore. It's not good for the hobby in the long term. Because we are under tremendous pressures now to really demonstrate the fact that we are using our spectrum, and at the same time turning off the youth that will keep the hobby going from now until then. And, you know, we do have leverage to be able to do things about that. But this type of behavior on our bands, it just can't be tolerated anymore. We just can't. It's not good for the hobby.
Well, you know, go ahead.
And I believe that the right people and the right leadership is going to be emerging, that something's going to be done. We are self-policing. And we have an outlet in order to bring attention to that kind of behavior. I believe we have to press the test button to get this behind us so we could move forward.
Well, you know, I watched this happen not too long ago. There was a group of fellows that were on 75 meters, and they were talking and carrying on. And one fellow who checked into the frequency, attempting to be rude, I guess I want to say. And I don't necessarily agree with everything that these guys do, but we had the geezers on the air again, and I just use that term. I don't care. I mean, if you want to be a geezer, then you're going to get labeled as a geezer, and on this radio show you are. These guys got on, and they were talking, and all of a sudden, these cryptic remarks come back over the air about one of the fellows being a no-code general. And, you know, these guys, well, once again, I own the frequency. I've been camped out here. Well, you know, what they don't understand is this is a privilege. This is not a right. You don't have a right to talk on the radio. You've been granted the privilege to operate on these frequencies. And
yes,
nobody, they haven't assigned you. The FCC did not assign you to this frequency and give you a license like a broadcast station and say, okay, you've got exclusive rights to this frequency over this particular coverage area. You know, and I don't know where this all comes from, but this is one of the things that if it's not kept in check will absolutely totally undermine and destroy the hobby, as well as create all kinds of ill will on the bands. And once that gets going, of course, then you have you have band wars and QRM and everything else that breeds out of that. But the seed The seed of it is, look at me. I own this frequency. I've been here for years and years, you know. And I'll tell you what. That's a hot button with me. I don't even want to get going on that. But I listened to that happen, and it did. It turned into a band war is what it turned into. And because tempers flare, and people get upset, and they think, you know, and of course there's nothing worse than having somebody try to belittle you over the air, you know, a no-code general. And it's just like I've said, and I've made this statement, I'll make it again on this show. People say, well, if you don't know CW, you don't belong on ham radio. And I say to the guy that says that, he needs to understand what a subnet mask is. And if he doesn't understand what that is, then he needs to get off the air. You know, the hobby's changing, and it's going to change, with or without the geezers. And, you know, and that's just, to me, that's the way it is, because the younger folks are going to wind up eating lunch, you know, over the old guys if they don't watch it. And there's no reason for that, because there's so much new, wonderful technology. There isn't anybody of any age group that can't benefit from joining in and being part of it, as well as being courteous and showing some manners over the air. I don't know. So there's my soapbox.
and we really, the issue now is that we are traveling at the speed of internet. And if we don't grasp that concept, then as Mr. Hatfield, W0IFO suggested, we are going to head towards antiquity. And I believe there's a whole new generation of ham radio operators that understand this and grasp this. And all of us do share the passion for our hobby. We will just have to, we're putting that, you know, that behavior, I don't know if it's going to go away, the purposeful jamming, the irresponsible remarks, you know, it's not a free-for-all on our spectrum. And two, at the same time, we are given a privilege and not a right. And when business interests begin taking a look, and they are looking really hard at what we have, you know, we have a lot of work to do to keep that. And we want to be able to get as many folks into the hobby and as many folks to turn the radios back on as well.
This is true. Well, listen, I want to thank you so much for joining us. This has been very, very cool. I've enjoyed it, and I want to encourage folks to go up and take a look at ka3drr.blogspot.com. That's ka3drr.blogspot.com. And I want to thank you so very much for joining us, Scott, and I want to have you back again soon. I want you to keep the blog spot going and keep twittering, and and a little while you can come back on, and we'll have a whole bunch of new stuff to talk about.
Ted, I had a great experience this afternoon. I would be happy to return and talk about ham radio. This was I'm really grateful and honored by this. It's a tremendous. Just tremendous. It was, I would have to say, as I say on the blog, it's this rocked my shackiverse.
Okay. Well, thank you so very much.
If you like to travel, if you're a camper, if you'd like to take your ham radio hobby with you when you go, you need the Trans World Antennas TW2010L Backpacker Antenna. It's the same exact antenna as the TW2010 Adventurer, with the exception it's been streamlined for the person who likes to camp and travel light. It's the same rugged antenna structure as the TW2010, with the black powder coating and stealth design. We all know the TW2010 is a great permanent or portable antenna, but the TW2010L Backpacker takes portable and emergency operation to an entirely new level. It's especially suited for the amateur operator who loves backpacking, cycling, camping. It makes easy access and quick setup possible for the most extenuating emergencies. TW2010L Backpacker Antenna is available now for a limited time for only $399.95. That's right, $399.95. Pricing includes backpacker, quadra stand, carrying bag, and free shipping in the continental United States through FedEx Ground. That's transworldantennas.com. And now for a limited time, only $399.95. That's transworldantennas.com.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of QSO. Brought to you by Transworld Antennas, Heil Sound, Gigaparts, PMC Science, Tux-Support.com, Markham Street Films, and Martin Lynch & Sons, your European distributors for the finest in amateur radio equipment. Our thanks to Tom Medlin, W5KUB with the Ham Helmet Radio Cam, and Scott Morrison, KA3DRR with KA3DRR.blogspot.com. Tune in next week, same time, same station, for another QSO.